in the industry on issues of transformation, using the Lipitsfield Charter. We're continuing with that process. Individual oil companies are on board on this. We have not covered all of them. So far we have met two of the oil companies. We felt it would be important to get the, as we continue with this process, to get the industry's perspective from SAPIA, to also get SASTA on board, so that we have a clear picture of what is happening. Because one of the challenging things and tasks we're faced with is to meet the targets of the charter. There seems to be a challenge. We want to get to the bottom of that and know exactly what are the issues, what needs to be done. Because the adherence to the charter can never be questioned. It's something we have to. We accordingly then have Mem Janice Monier from representing SAPIA. We also have Mr. Mashani from SASA. Let's get the presentation from SAPIA first, get into discussions and questions. We then have presentation from SASA. It would be important that even after the questions were posed to SASA and you know, discussions thereof, we also get to interact with both parties as members, so that we really get to understand what is happening here and why this slow pace in movement forward in the transformation. So that without any further ado, we'll give it to Mem Monien to take us through and take the next presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity. I must firstly apologize for Connell not being able to make this meeting today. He's had a long-standing meeting with the DG, which he couldn't cancel and he couldn't postpone because of the availability of the DG. So he sends his apologies, and also on behalf of the Board of Governors as well. They were also wanted to be at this meeting today, and unfortunately they were also had to attend this meeting with the DG. So apologies on behalf of Connell Mukuna. I also want to say, just from the onset, this presentation was compiled by Connell. He did every single bit of it in terms of putting the transformation in the Petroleum Energy presentation together, and I'll be presenting on behalf of him today. Okay, just so I can introduce the panel that we've got supporting me in this presentation, we've got Ivan Collier from Shell, we've got Zulashi McKee from Sasol, and Ibrahim from India. Okay, if I can start with the presentation. I think from the presentation perspective, this presentation really is an overview. It's a self-assessment that Connell Sophia has done independently. It has not been audited. And I think the process going forward would be that it would be audited by the Impartex evaluation later on this year, which is scheduled for around September this year. So just in terms of the stats, it's been all the members of the SAPIA BEE Forum have submitted stats to Connell, and he's basically put together the figures that we're presenting here today. Okay, the objective of the session, I think, is really to update the Portfolio Committee on Achievements by the Petroleum Industry on Transformation. Basically, what we've used as a base of our self-evaluation is the Liquid Fuels Charter. We've also done, and this evaluation is really done at industry level. So you'll see there'll be a lack of detail or specific detail around specific companies, because we're trying to get a view from an industry level. What we've also, Connell's also tried to do is also identify gaps and also sketch the way forward into the future. Okay, the aim of the liquid fuels charter is to ensure that there's a sustainable presence, ownership and control by historically disadvantaged Africans to approximately 25% of all facets of the liquid fuels industry by 2010. I think all of us in the room are quite aware of this statement. And if we look at what we as a forum together with Cynthia has done, is actually look at all the elements based in that is housed within the Liquid Fuels Charter. And we've split it out into these seven elements, which is ownership, management, control, equity, skills development, preferential procurement, enterprise development, and socioeconomic development. Each one of these elements are represented in a qualitative view in our Liquid Fuels Charter. And I think all of us have an understanding by now what the ownership is that is stated in the liquid fuel, the commitment in the Liquid Fuels Charter, which says the effective ownership of enterprises of black people, okay, and it's including black people and black women. Effective control of enterprises of black people, and here we're saying we're measuring executive board and senior top management. Employment equity represents equity in the workplace, and it encourages employees to identify and recruit black people at professional, middle, and lower management positions. Skills development. Hello? Is it working? Yes, okay. Skills development is really the development of competencies of black people. and really where we are, what we're doing in this is encouraging companies to develop black talents through spending on skills development, overseas placements, and learnership. So when we go into the preferential procurement leg, we're looking at procurement of goods and services with strong BEE recognition levels. It encourages us to procure from BEE companies, encourages the spend of small micro enterprises greater than 50% black ownership, as well as greater than 50% black woman-owned companies. When we look at enterprise development, we believe that this is part of accelerating the development of sustainability of other enterprises. It encourages the development or expansion of black small medium enterprises, particularly along the value chain. Our socioeconomic development is there to promote access of the economy to black people, and it encourages initiatives intended to directly provide black people with who are natural persons with the means of generation and income for themselves. So that's an overview in terms of all the elements, and what the presentation will then do is go through each one of these elements and tell us what the industry, what transformation in the industry around each one of these elements we are achieving. Here we go to ownership, and really ownership, most of the oil companies have signed equity deals with broad-based black economic groupings. Okay, the ownership target, as we know, is 25% by 2010. The ownership deals were signed by all major companies. The average industry ownership owned by BEE companies is 22%. Negotiations to extend the ownership deal to 25% is ongoing. We are all on track. The industry believes that we are all on track to achieve a minimum 25% ownership by BEE companies across the value chain. In terms of management and control, target of 25% by 2010. Just in terms of some of the things that how the achievement is going, our superior director is black. Our superior board of governors are now 71% black. Our black representatives in oil company boards is approximately 53%. Women representation on boards is approximately 20%. Executive black representation in oil company boards is 40%. Executive black management representation is 50%. So if I can move to employment equity, 25% by 2010. We said these are the graphs that show what our current representation is, and black staff complement in the oil companies is approximately 63%.
So if we look at the two graphs, it's showing a 64.8 average for black and 35.10 for white residents. If we break down that 64% of black representation within the industry, we have a 54.2% African, 32.1% colored, and 13.7% Indian. Okay? The industry needs to improve women representation at all levels of the organization. Employment equity, women, we recognize that this is our weakness. Women account for only 24% of the staff complement, and only 20% of board representation is comprises of women. If we look at our male-female, our gender stacks within the industry, 75.9% is represented by male, and 24.1% is on female. If we break down that 24% female representation within the industry in terms of demographics, the female white represents 40%, female Indian is 6%, female African is 29.4%, and female colored is 24%. Thank you. Moving on to skills development, I think many interventions have been implemented and developed to develop staff within the oil industry. 70 million has been spent by industry on black skills development. We've started in 2005, we started the Leadership in Oil and Energy program with a special focus on women. And this program is really aimed at increasing management skills for black people within the industry with specific oil industry type modules to promote the learning around the actual industry so that we could get a management course that was specially focused and geared around specific oil industry skills. And we've had 50 delegates qualifying graduates on that program thus far. We've also instituted learnership programs, 1,000 students in 2007. The Artesian program training in South Africa, 145 million has been spent per annum. We've also embarked on many functional training programs in terms of business management, supervisory skills, and loss prevention systems to improve safety. Upgrade. I can't see the bottom of this slide. But it's really in terms, it's particularly in our refineries, we've instituted a couple of programs around safety. Okay, if I can move to procurement. Our local preferential procurement has exceeded the oil industry charter, target of 25%. Current industry B procurement of goods and services exceeds 50%. It's standing at approximately 6.5 billion rand. We've got a procurement policies in place. Every single company has verified that they have procurement policies in place, and they all monitor BEE spend on a monthly basis. As part of the Sophia BEE forum, we also have a procurement committee that reports into our forum that focuses purely on BEE procurement in the industry. All our suppliers are evaluated using the industry standard, and this is the standard that the procurement committee has come up with, and they have been so that we know when we report and when we report our figures, we know that we're reporting on based on everybody's used the same criteria. Crude procurement, as we know, has been a major issue for us, and crude procurement from BEE companies is happening. But the current level are far from the target. This is exceeding our urgent attention. SASDA was created in order to improve supply development within the industry. Okay, the creation of a supply agency SASDA has not delivered expected results. And really around supply development, we as an industry we committed to supply development. The industry spends approximately 5 million rand a year on SASDA. Staff has also been seconded to SASDA from oil companies. And SASDA has developed an industry database. Some enhancements still need to be implemented. What we have found is that there's been a conflicting strategic direction between DME and industry led to SASDA non-delivery. This needs to be resolved in order to ensure that we do get the benefits of supplies being developed into the future. Okay, move to enterprise development, and here several emerging black small business companies have received support from oil companies. Okay, so we can just list a few. We've got Africa Oil Investment, Africa Oil, which received investment infrastructure support. We've got Masana Petroleum, which has received infrastructure support, capacity building, and business support. We've got Mzansi Logistics, which received financial capacity building and training. We've got the Sakaya Trust, Highveld Reach Business Development. We've also had companies invest in integrated energy centers, which has been a project from DME, who have received financial business and training support. If we look at our network in terms of retail, our black representation in the network is approximately 40%, and there are many programs in place in the individual companies to improve this percentage. Corporate responsibility aims at sustainable development initiatives as envisaged in the Liquid Fuels Charter. We've got more than $100 million invested by the industry in 2007, and most of the recipients, categories of recipients of this money has gone into education, especially maths and science, job creation, social development, health, which with a strong focus on AIDS, the environment, and road safety programs. So in summary, our current assessment is that the industry is on track towards achieving the Liquid Fuel Charter in 2010 aspirations. And really the way forward is what we are working on constantly is to increase black and women representation in senior and professional levels. We also need to direct skill spend at core and critical skills and women development. We need to ensure that black suppliers are developed. And we need to continue to increase the number of black representation in our retail network. And that's the end of our presentation. Honourable Chair.
Thank you.
Again, where is the black empowerment? Again, is this black empowerment in the mother company, or is this black empowerment you're talking about here? Is this in the retail business? Because the problem is, most of these companies, it's overseas companies. They come from America, UK, Australia, all these countries. And the big money is making, they make before they land in South Africa. So they really make the money before it landed in South Africa. And the BEE is not in that company. That company, the BEE is only in the retail business. And the charter, and the Freedom Charter even also says, the people shall still share the wealth of the country. And again, there's only a few people in South Africa who benefit out of this BEE deal. You can go through all these BEE deals. You will see it's only a little bit of a certain group of people. Now, I start wondering, why can we not start, because most of these companies give the money for the BEE deal. They lend the money for the BEE deal. Why can't they not lend it to their own workers, for example? Make sure that the workers is benefiting out of this thing, that we share the the wealth of the country. I think there's only one or two very, very big companies who share these businesses. And then we're talking about 17 million rand was in the whole industry was spending on training. 17 million rand out of a sector of about, I'm not sure, about 40 billion in the country. Maybe more, I don't know. It's a drop in the ocean. And still we sit with a skills problem in South Africa. What are you doing or what are you saying to make sure that these companies are spending more money in training and make sure that we really have enough skills in this country? And lastly, percent of the retail business belongs to Black and Bold. Now you can go to most, and my question is, what is this company doing to make sure that this 40% retail is going to Black Empowerment, to the federal state, making money? Because the problem is, you can go to many of them. It's very, very near to Denver. It's one not far from where we're staying here in Cape Town. The new one, one of your companies. One of your companies. Every second day we want to put petrol in the additional petrol. And then you can ask. We didn't have money to buy petrol, we didn't have maybe the cash to do it. So what are we doing to make sure to help these people to really make money? Otherwise, we only make people angry. Because people who got money, people will be angry.
Yes, Chairperson, thank you very much. My apologies for being late. Other issues that have been. I will inform you later, Chairperson. Chairperson, Honorable Comrick is correct to ask in which structure do we really benefit. And I mean, really, Chairperson, if you look at our BEE procurement, and I'm very hard on crude, because it is where the mess and where the jam is. It's where the jam is. If we start with oil, we have to start off with the crude. We have to look into the main line and start getting our people involved into the main line of beneficiation, and not only on the retail. So that one, Chairperson, is very much important and crucial. But I can see here that it is presently receiving attention. But again, Chairperson, another issue that we have to focus on is on this learnership program. Chairperson, for as long as we are not properly informed and trained in the oil field, for that long will the industry remain intact, lily white. And there is 1,000 students in this learnership program, according to the report. But are those students, how fast are they spread? Are they spread right through all the universities, or is it only at one or two institutions? Secondly, Chairperson, what is the industry doing in order to canvas potential candidates from school level so that we can attract them from there, and especially in rural areas. You know, in rural areas is where you get the untapped talent, where people can get the engineers of tomorrow. The different enterprises, Chairperson, as Honorable Comrade has indicated that black representation in retail is approximately 40%. Programs in place to improve this. Now, Chairperson, we've been in a democratic country since 1994. If we say the retail, and we don't want to refer to the truck driver section that they've improved now, but we really mean that an owner must be able to operate his business 100%, and it must not only be the filling station. There are other opportunities within the industry that they have to come up and give us a clear indication and say, this is what we have done with this company, and this is the progress. And even then, those who do manage to have companies, Jeff, are the oil industry companies giving them empowerment during their establishment? Or are they just giving them that opportunity to establish their company and leave them like that? I should think that you need to give somebody who establish an oil company or a retail company needs to get proper training. I'll appreciate it if you can give me those kinds of answers. Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Lastly, we're talking about management. Very brilliant. We went to some of these companies, and the management is still black. I mean, it's very beautiful. But the problem is, both of those legs, the moment they arrive there, some of them is whiter than me.
Mm-hmm.
Really. They, because money is now the important thing. Not really the reason we were in the struggle and make sure that the wealth will go to the people. Now, you have the top level there. Just under the top level, everyone is white. Everyone is. It's still those, not everyone, but at least 70%. Some of them is very, very open-minded. They happy to change. They're happy to work together with government. But then you find that 20% of their 70% who's really still in the old regime, and they will never change. And the decision is made on not on stop. Really, day-to-day basic job is done on the second day. And that's where the problem is. If we're not going to change your second and your third management levels, we will never change the system. Because the contract for supply something to the company is not done by the CEO of the company. It's done there at the lower level. The decision they make is only executive decision. So maybe you can just explain what we're doing to change the company's down. I mean, I know it's a skilled business. You need some people with skills, but at least have we someone in training to make sure that when this guy passes away, at least there is someone black or colored or green or pink who has the job.
Perhaps on the issue of skills development, taking further from what the whip has left off there, to what extent does this deal with the competitiveness of the industry itself? Because if you are to transform the industry, but then deal with the peripheral skill, not going to actually achieve in the medium and to long term to achieve what we want to. The other area relates to the role of staff and the support by the industry. What is disturbing here is that you have mentioned that there's been over a period of time that have been developed by SASTA and so on, but you also raises an impediment the relation, particularly between the because of some strategic conflict between the industry and the department. I don't know what is that. If that can be clarified so that we understand what is this strategic conflict. I would not go back to what the law has raised on the fruit. You see, I think somehow complex issues has really changed. But you know, this thing of receiving urgent attention, what does it mean? How can it be qualified? How urgent is this urgent attention? If I'm in the industry, I wouldn't have approached Parliament and public representatives without interacting with what has been raised in the Empower Tax report as it relates to oil companies. I think that because you have said that you didn't prepare specifics, perhaps we were supposed to say that because we want to know, not this overview. See, this overview is too general. It's not helping to understand. There are specific matters raised by Empower Tax and have taken up those matters with at least two individual companies who have visited so far. But it's lacking here. Now, the report we have as this parliament is the report from Empower Tax, which says exactly. That is why I started by saying that the pace is slow, because this is the report, comprehensive report we got. Empower Tax. You can have your response. And then just take the next the presentation.
Okay, just to address the first question around ownership in terms of the retail business and mother companies and offshore BEE. I think from our perspective, the strategy for BEE is a broad-based strategy, and I think from the presentation we tried to show you in terms of the various elements. So seven elements really address BEE reciprocation to different levels of either the company or South Africa. So in terms of the ownership, we do have broad-based ownership and partners. In terms of who would reciprocate from the management control and employment equity and skills development, that's a huge portion of where direction of broad-based BEE is actually going to employees. So employees are getting opportunities within organizations. They're also getting skills development opportunities as well. In terms of procurement and enterprise development, we're looking at the recipients being small, medium-sized black enterprises within South Africa, and they will be benefiting in that way from the strategy. The CSI, we're looking at the beneficiary base being those who are already at base in terms of getting access to education, assistance in education, assistance in health and education and safety. So in terms of your answer, who are benefiting from the industry's initiatives from BEE, I firmly believe that there are more than just those that are being being benefiting from the equity deals as such. So we need to look at BEE as a broad-based beneficiary base. Okay, if I can take your next question in terms of the skills development and maybe include all other comments around skills development. 17 million, yes, might seem like a drop in an ocean, and I think a lot of effort has to be put in place in terms of putting the required skills training courses together to give valid and appropriate training to black employees. And I think the question around, are we getting training in core business? We're saying that is, from a Sophia perspective, we've got a project manager in place in order to look at the skills development and run with initiatives around skills development. Part of the focus of what she has, it's Althea Hunger-Bustman, she's been working with closely with Cheetah and forming an alliance with Cheetah so that we can actually work together in terms of making sure that we are focusing on core and critical fuel for black people and making sure that the programs are in line and delivering in terms of the SACWA qualifications. Okay, so we are working in that, and yes, the core business strategy is really something that we're focusing on. We're focusing on directly to make sure that we have courses around this. I think the leadership in oil and energy program is a very good example of saying where we as the industry together with Fitz Business School, together with NEPI, have come up with a program that really is specific to management, middle management into senior management skills in terms of management. So we have got effort in that line to try and make sure that some of the areas of our industry are actually being addressed in terms of bridging that skills development.
So your skills focus is on management, nothing technical.
No, sorry, I focused on that in my response, but I think that was more to answer your question in terms of saying that second tier and third tier level has to be transformed. And that is why we focused on the oil and leadership program. And I think maybe Zulaki can maybe help me on this one in terms of the learnerships and the skills training on a more practical and artesian level. We've got many courses available in terms of learnership as well as practical courses that we're working with people involved in. Okay, and particularly for refinery upgrades, I think we've also spent quite a bit of money in that area.
And mostly, I think among the finalists, some of them are not received, but these are mostly unemployed
graduates. What does this person do? You get trained. How far does this person go? I mean, what? The content of this training, of the skills development, there are many trainings you can do. You can train a person.
No, I think what I mentioned is that we are working within the SACWA accreditation. I think we have all committed as companies to make sure that the South African qualifications accreditation, all our courses or all our skills development spend has to be spent within those within the parameters of SACWA, so that when we put people through training, no matter what level the training was, they are going to come up with some kind of NQF qualification that would be portable from our industry to other industries.
Denise, if I can just add to that. Chairperson, if you're looking at technical training, and especially looking at second and third tier training, we have tailored training programs for certain specific careers. Like, for example, we've got a top program in some of the companies where you're training people who've got a BCom, wanted to become a chartered accountant, never had the opportunity to. So you put a training program in place to train them to become chartered accountants in the organization. And the recipients of this training are mostly black. So you've got 90-10. Okay, so they could become financial people within the company. As I presented in the presentation, we spent 145 million rand on artisan training. So this is in various refineries, together with companies. Like, for example, if you look at in Durban, you'll find companies like Mondi, Sepref, the engine refinery, all come together and say, look, we need to train people in this basin. So the skills, the communities in that area are trained for welding and other things that would be needed in times of shutdown. So those people can be used when the shutdown comes. The local people get employed or get preference to be employed. Now, coming back to the 70 million rand, which is a drop in the ocean in terms of a 40 million rand industry, we've got to take this into account that the skills development spend is a percentage of total salaries in the industry. And if you look at it in proportion to total salary, it's between 3 and 4% of the industry total salary bulk, which is the best compared to other industries in this country. It is world best practice, between 3 and 4%. Interesting also to note that the charter target, the Code of Good Practice target, is 2% and then 3% in 10-year term. So we're actually meeting what is now being set as a standard for South African companies to meet. Coming to the question of who are the recipients of these BEE deals. We're finding that as we started the charter, the companies or the countries around South Africa, Southern African countries, Namibia, Botswana, Lesotho, are all talking about citizen empowerment. So whatever operations our companies have in those countries, they're saying the local community should also benefit, as we are saying our local community should benefit in the operations of our country. The Liquid Fuels Charter was signed by the South African elements, or the South African companies of these international firms. And whatever business they do in this country, 25% of that must be owned by black people. And that's what the charter says quite plainly. But whatever happens outside of the South African business, that's still a different issue. I mean, it would be wonderful if you could get, you know, some of the profits that are declared by the multinational oil companies is many, many billions of dollars. But obviously, most of that business is not done in South Africa. South Africa is, in most cases, a very small percentage of that entire business. But whatever's been operating in South Africa, 25% of that must be done in, must be with the Black Economic Empowerment Entity. Now, coming to who the beneficiaries of this is, and we come to the issue of crude. If you do the procurement opportunities with many people, you can go and empower many small businesses. But then coming back to your question, Mr. Compton, if you do a crude deal, would that then benefit the real people of the ground? Or would that then benefit the high-flying people? And then, are the empowerment groups involved as shareholders in these BE deals, do they benefit from those crude deals that are done within those companies? And would they want to be the companies in first preference doing it? A lot of the crude deals are done from country to country level. You know, with Saudi Arabia or Iran and so on, when it comes to Nigeria, the countries where the crude is produced. We've got no crude in this country. So to develop that skill and to make sure that you're not enriching people but empowering people to get real traders in our country, that is the challenge. But it's a challenge that we must meet. And it's a challenge that the industry is committed to.
Another question I'd like to probably also respond to is around the retail and in terms of a 40% black network. I think I can speak on behalf of all the industry in that we don't want to set up a retail site that is going to fail because it's damaging to our brands individually and it's damaging to our business as a whole because that is our conduit to actually get our product to our customers. So it's a business partnership between the retailer and our companies, and we need to actually make sure that whoever we put in that retail site has the competencies, they've got the support, and they've got the infrastructure support to be able to make business profitable. And I think that is our aim, because if they don't perform on the ground, we won't be profitable either. So that's our attention, and it's damaging to our brand if you go to a service station and there is not any fuel because of those things. So that would be my response to that. In terms of support and in terms of increasing the number of black retailers, I think a lot of effort has gone into a recruitment program on various, I think in all companies, in terms of recruiting particular people from all levels of education. I think we've had some people recruited from the district level to become retailers. And I think it's a program that is an ongoing program that we need to obviously learn from. It's all new stuff. It's all new types of programs that we need to refine and assist. I think that would be my response to that.
I don't know if you can just add to the retail issue. I think just to make the point that part of government licensing and regulations that it's about to be implemented specifies quite clearly that the licensing condition is, you know, meeting the charter is a licensing condition. So if you don't do that, if there's no move by companies to meet it in normal process of doing the business, they'll be forced to buy the licensing condition. If they don't do it, they won't get a license to operate the business anyway. So there's a lot of pressure from government, from the industry in general, and also from the marketplace to meet these objectives anyway.
Jefferson, if I could just address the one question from Comrade Sam on the rural development or skills development from school kids. you'll find that most companies are investing in school bursary programs or education programs from 10 and 8 level, from grade 10 level. And the focus is mainly on math and science. And it is on rural areas. In fact, you'll find in most companies that they offer bursaries to first year school students who come through the math and science programs. If I know of one company where we got incubator schools, and the other company supported as well, specifically math, science, and English. And the graduates coming out of these math, science, and English classes that they held every Saturday, they get bursaries to then go to university, and some of the students then get absorbed within the companies. And it is done in rural areas as well. And the idea is to expand this into more areas.
Recruitment of learners in rural areas, is there any format that you send out or inform the public that this is the required form that learners must complete in order to qualify for a bursary in this direction? And if there is such, can you please also give us that kind of form so that we can distribute it to our constituencies? Most of us are from rural areas here, and we are sitting with that problem. They are not well informed.
Yeah, we could quite easily get Mr. Chase to Honourable Lowe. We can provide it either to the Secretariat, and then it can be distributed, or it can be done directly to Honourable Lowe. We can provide this information to you, because they're quite readily available. I think most of us operate either on our own or via an NGO in those rural areas, and it's freely available. But obviously, that's often only known to people who know about it. So I do agree we have to make it more, to maybe make it more available and widely known, and we can do that by the parliamentary members. Quite correct, Honourable Chair.
I think we've addressed all your questions. If there's anything. Okay, the first one.
It's important to first start by saying founder was, or else the industry was a catalyst that is when founder was established. And then it was envisaged that founder would actually create a pool of suppliers and train them for the industry where they are ready when they get. And really, we started with a database with that supporting SAUDA throughout. So the role of industry in SAUDA is quite active. All service industries are represented in SAUDA in the board. Sometimes they create problems because of the stakeholder board, and there are very few independent people to actually judge the processes. So I would just say, in terms of structuring the board, sometimes it can be a big problem, and we've seen it because people tend to be defensive with the board rather than create those issues. So one of the steps. But also, the whole approach in SAUDA has been quite a big bang one. I mean, there were quite a lot of projects that we started that were quite bigger than what the industry has researched. We wanted a piecemeal development of SAUDA by starting having suppliers develop the future engage. At the same time, SAUDA raised certain issues in terms of looking at the whole contract, for the industry as well. And that raised issues of confidentiality. In my view, really, SAUDA is becoming much more bigger than the industry, because I think the need for it is much more broader than just the oil industry. And I think it's something that must be dealt with the department, see if SAUDA can take up all the involved other stakeholders in SAUDA other than just the oil industry. Any additions?
I can just add, Honourable Chair, I think you asked the question early on, what is the conflict at a strategic level between industry and SAUDA and the department, that's an hampering SAUDA delivery. And it's fairly straightforward in that, and I think about a minute to by my colleague here, we don't differ in the objective of fast-tracking BEE supply communities. It's about the manner in how we go about it. And you made reference to the point that, you know, a big bang approach versus an incremental approach, whereby it's almost demand-driven, where we would say, in the industry, these are where there are areas of insufficient BEE spend. How do we get there? And you do it from a smaller base rather than a big base. And I do agree with him that maybe in the industry versus DME's approach is that DME has a much more grander vision for SASA that is going to be much more encompassing of resolving issues that are being there that's much wider than just the oil industry. And we, you know, wanted it to be fairly specific to address our needs, to address liquid fuel charter shortcomings. And I think that is what is the main cause in hampering SASA in delivering the money that is supposed to.
To the next presentation by SASA, and then we take another round of engagement thereafter and see the way forward.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm with the Bukhazida from the department. My name is Ibrahim Mashani. I would first like to start with perhaps a request to say that when we look at the presentation that I would make, it would differ significantly with what the industry has presented. And I speak from a practical point of view, having sat there for 17 months. And I will use this as an analogy, and I picked this from SAA, so please bear with me. It says, in the event of loss of cabin pressure, the oxygen mask will drop from above your head. Pull the mask over your mouth and nose and continue to breathe normally. Please ensure your own mask is secured first, and I emphasize first, before you assist other passengers, including children. As a beneficiary of affirmative action myself, I want to believe that all black people that are serving in these industries, in their various capacities, they have their own mask and they're breathing normally. What is left of them is to assist other passengers and children. And these are indeed black businesses that are sitting out there, and they're not getting that assistance. So the result thereof is that if you don't get oxygen, eventually you'll die. And that has got its own implications. The problem of supply development,
I hope you have not experienced that situation on FAA, or is it a...
It's an analysis. I'm trying to draw reference so that if you use that as a basis, you'll then say, is black business getting the oxygen? Are they getting the assistance on the basis? This problem started at Petro-SA at the request of the department. And it was meant as a pilot that will deliver several objectives. One, it will present the industry with a platform for cost and operational efficiency. It will help major industry players to understand the requirements around empowerment with regards to enterprise development. Also, to help us understand or demonstrate the feasibility of the concept and learn some lessons from it. And with that, then have an operational framework that we can roll out to ensure that we indeed develop people. And with that, then create an implementation model, and then make sure that the industry-wide, they can then adopt that model. As a result of that, Secretary Seattle's generosity seconded me to go ahead with this entity called SASDA. But at the pilot itself, there were several things that we learned, and I'll try and allude to that. There were five companies that eventually came out of that process. SASDA invested 14 million rand of its own money. 1/4. And those companies, from the report that I got, they have now made around 72.3 million rand, right, since operating in 2004 November to date. They started with 90 employees. They have now increased by 38 new employees. Not only that, they have market, they have expanded their market to include the refinery, the Saldana, in storage facilities, the Milnerton facilities, the platform and the Oak, which has broadened their market within just Petroleum. And these are five companies. Now, they also successfully completed all the tasks allocated to them during the 2006 shutdown. Now, my observation is that we managed to create at most five companies within a year. And it was the two of us and the committee supporting. Which means that if one were to build on that process, we could be sitting with at least 25 companies additional and more jobs. Out of that, women make around 28 from the total number. Now, these are average education levels. There's a very intake, standard 8 or grade 10. They have also managed to have their own annual general meeting. Bearing in mind that these are direct suppliers, your ordinary men and women from the streets, who would otherwise not have had an opportunity to run a business. So it then proves that the concept of development, if it is properly funded and we follow the model that has been implemented at the present, it works. And it can enable a lot of people to benefit. So I thought I should just give that as a background. And all these things happened because the then minister, Pumzile Mlambo Ngcobo, was strict. She gave us 3 months to come up with a program. She said she wants to launch it. And then she insisted she wants to see results. She was on top of the game all the time. So there was pressure for us to deliver. Hence, we delivered this thing. So if it can work here, why is it that it doesn't work in the entire industry? That's the question that we need to ask. There are several things that make us do what we want to do. As an industry, we've said, why do we need to change the way we do things? One, because we know that black suppliers themselves are unable to diversify their customer base. In other words, they can't supply more than one oil company at any given time because of capacity. And that is why SASDA was formed. We also know that there is lack of timely access to information about procurement opportunities. Again, only PetroSA advertises its tenders openly. The rest don't. So how do we hope that blacks will ever know where the opportunities are? There is limited availability of skills critical to core industry operations. It's nice to talk about toilet paper supplies and cleaners and whatever. But what about the engineers that can work in those refineries during turnaround times and shutdowns? Those companies are not there. Then there is the issue of lack of access to financial resources, particularly for capitalization purposes. Another example, had PetroSA not invested that 14 million rand, we wouldn't be having these 14 companies, some of these five companies. So you need to invest in these entities so that they can indeed become companies and greenfields can be created in this country. You also have an issue that deals with the domination of large incumbent suppliers, white and multinationals most of the time. If they have shareholders who are black, they are not even playing a significant role. They only come to market an opportunity to you. From there, you don't see those black players anymore. They wait for the dividend to come. You also have this relationship that is long-standing that expands over years between the suppliers and the industry, and then, of course, fronting. And as a result, you end up having duplications in terms of some BE procurement processes. You know, because now you, You try and train the person, and another person goes to another company and says, no, 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 we need our own training. You want to come and do business at BP, this is the form you must fill. You want to go do business at Engen, this is the other form you must fill. So you create more barriers for these people than creating efficiency. And hence, as I was going to try and address these issues. So that's very critical, so that when we deal with it, we look at it holistically. The mandate. We defined the mandate in terms of two areas, one, the vision and the mission. We said, as an organization, we want to be a leader in developing globally competitive black South African suppliers in the petroleum and liquid fuel industry. And if we were to underline globally competitive, it then means we need to make critical three areas. One, the market, which is the opportunity which comes through tenders and opportunities in this industry. And two, the issue of skills. And three, the issue of resources. That's how you build globally competitive entities. And our mission thereof was then to accelerate progress in the empowerment of the historically disadvantaged Africans through increased access to industry procurement opportunities. And that entails we need to then accredit these suppliers to look at their BE status that it is truly what they claim it is. And of course then developing their skills to meet industry required standards. Because the standards of the industry, if you have an electrician, electrician is an electrician, but there might be specific nuances that apply to refinery business. Those, if they are made available, you are then able to develop and provide that kind of service. Then you also need the issue to provide capacity building. So using your own resources as SASDA, being funded by the industry, but also partnering with other developmental agencies. So that was the approach and that was the mandate that was given to us. And as we started unpacking it, that's where the problem started. And I'll come to that. We then came up and said, what are the objectives that we need to do? And I'll try and run through this so that we can have time to debate this thing. The first area of point of call or objective that needed to be addressed was we needed to consolidate existing industry supplier development efforts and progress, right? And harmonize the accreditation of these suppliers. And then fully utilize the common industry database that would have been created. That has not happened. We needed to implement and manage supplier development programs. That hasn't happened. We needed to actually source suppliers according to industry requirements. That hasn't happened. We needed to preferentially develop suppliers from designated groups, including women. That hasn't happened. We needed to increase access to information by HDSA. That has not happened. We needed to facilitate supplier participation in global procurement. That hasn't happened. We needed to provide a mechanism for monitoring and auditing of compliance and measure successes through governance, etc., etc. Some part of it has happened. The bottom part, which is feedback, hasn't happened. And of course, our functions, we then will tell that we need to refine the BE criteria, the targets and measurements, because the charter just talks globally about 25%. It doesn't give you details on how you are going to invest and fund on development, for example. It doesn't say anything. Silence on that. And then, of course, we needed to make sure that the management and further development of an empowerment supplier database, which will include the broadening of that database to include information about procurement opportunities as well as service providers. Because you need to make these things so that you can do development. How do you develop a supplier if you do not know what the requirements are? It baffles me. And then, of course, you need to establish an enabling relationship between suppliers and service providers. Because the service providers are mainly the guys who come to provide consultancy service. If the expectations are not properly balanced and aligned from the onset, you'll get a different result. Then we needed also to conduct market research, both in the industry and monitor the supplier as well as the industry, and report as to what is the performance. Because you can't do the other and not measure the other. You need to look at whether things are happening or not. And get clarification from the industry, on request basically, to deal with the issue of resolving areas wherein black business has been unsuccessful to get business or they are not performing, so that we can then come on board and empower them further. And if it means we need to bring in further different skills to capacitate this entity, we then do that. And then, of course, align our strategies and actions with other complementary initiatives, such as those that are happening at the DTI, you know, Department of Finance, etc., etc., and report on KPIs. Our model, as it stands, that then was proposed. And this is a product of the research that was done by CME in consultation with the industry. At the time I was working at Petrosi, we participated in the development of these things and agreed on it. We said we'll have a database wherein buyers of the oil companies can go there to look for suppliers. And the suppliers at the same time will be able to go there and look for opportunities, which now ties up with the objectives that I've raised in the function. Which then says, we'll expect the industry to then provide us and communicate the opportunities that are available so that we can prepare the black players. And when they do award these deals, they need to also tell us so that we can monitor these suppliers, so they perform, etc., etc. On our side, we'll have partners that provide us with both the tech requirements, capacity building, equipment, etc., etc. Accredited so that we know that there is no delay when development needs to happen. We also then said we'll link up with the processes that are happening within CITAS through the learnership and also try and source these mentors that are mainly made up of retirees. Because not everyone that goes through learnership gets employed by these companies. So those that will not may have the technical skills that we can utilize and formulate them into businesses so that they can trade going forward. So that's the tenure of the model. And it will have a board, and unfortunately it became a stakeholder board, which did not become functional. Because when people come to these meetings, they now take, they bring their own individual company positions and not look at the fiduciary duties of being a board that should look at the interests of SALTA. And that's why it's not working. Now, even in terms of the database itself, there are issues, and I'll address this as I proceed. We then said the implementation model for this organization, the first beginning stage will be to have a common database. Yes, we have a system, but that system has got information that comes from two companies, PetroSA and Caltex. And I'll show you the results of the suppliers that we have as we go along. Then we'll proceed as we move forward with the organization to have what we call progressive institutional framework, which is the development of systems, of processes to make sure that things happen going forward, right? And then basically then move on and do the development with the intervention, which will then say we'll come with projects to empower specific people or companies so that they can begin to trade. And eventually until they breach and become globally competitive. And then we can look at the size or the measure of the impact that has been made as a result of that. All these things are in the business plan. That was discussed with the industry, which today is being questioned. The implementation that we agreed on was that the first year, it's all in there. We'll consolidate existing supply development initiatives. It hasn't happened. In the second year, we'll facilitate the transformation of existing white suppliers to make sure that we can begin to inculcate the spirit of transform, because in some instances, some guys will have to transform them than create new players due to the costs involved, etc., etc. And then as you go through your year three, you know, you'll be looking at interventions, you'll be looking at development of suppliers to provide services beyond South Africa, etc., etc. Up until in the long term, which is 5 years, you will then facilitate black business participation in crude procurement. Another area that is being contested and questioned. So, for me, as I sit here, I say to myself, there should be a possibility that probably we are reading different documents. Yet, it's the same document. Probably the interpretation is different. Yet, it's the same document that all of us looked at with our lawyers for that matter. So, Chairperson, in the classification of suppliers that we developed, we then broke them down into three categories. The first one being the club. This is a supplier who's like Tokyo for who's prepared to go and trade. They can go in there. All they need is an opportunity. So all they need really is they come to our database, they look at, oh, BP has got an opportunity. Boom, they go bid for it. All we'll get is a recording that indeed they came through the system and they've succeeded in the business. Right. Then you have your class R supplier. This is a supplier that most of the time, the guy has got technical know-how. He might be a lawyer, but they lack offices, they lack finance, they lack some kind of support, but not that big.
Right.
And that's where we felt most of the development will focus there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you look at the model that we followed at Petro-SA, we went for ordinary folks, men and women from the street. Those we call them class Z suppliers. They need extensive inputs in either skills upgrading, capacity building, before they could be ready to provide services to the industry. And that, on its own, does then indicate that you also need resources to fund those kind of interventions. And of course, the performance indicators, we have listed them, but I'll go into detail as I do the value chain. We then developed the value chain on the basis of our understanding of what our mandate was. Because we were told that you are going to deal with procurement of the industry. We then said the input for us will be the audit that is done by the department on the industry to say, they are gaps. Or this is the performance trend as it exists. It's audited, it's evaluated. Based on that, we'll have specific output, which will give us the procurement spend status. Out of that, we'll then be able to come up with a plan as to how then do we help the industry improve going forward. And then you match those procurement opportunities to the supplier database, right? And then you look at the individual oil companies. You create your project, you scope it, you have a project plan, you go for funding, you do the intervention. Then the tender process kicks off independently within those individual companies. But we don't get involved in how they procure and who they procure from. All we then come in and do will be to follow up going later. And out of that, if you look at it, the inputs of all the metrics, that will show you the deliverables. But I will not go into detail because then I will waste your time. But you can read that at your own leisure. You will be amazed at the amount of data and information that you can extract. So when somebody says, I'm doing development, they should be passing on those areas under the metrics. We've done the same also when you then begin to deal with the suppliers themselves. Because you need to measure both sides. You know, you need to know how much you're spending when you do these aspects, when you invite people in, what kind of skills are they making. All those kind of factors are there, and they're kept under the metrics. So I will not repeat that. Indeed, the 5 million we've received, I've listed the detail with the notes, so I'll not bother you with that. It's all else with the norms. But what have we done as the organization amid all these difficulties that we're faced? We managed to then create together with the industry, which is good. We agreed on a board charter. We had board committees, although some of them never met or never meet. Even if they meet, decisions are never made. We have a verification process where we even set up an entity, but it's not been utilized. We have developed intervention processes that are not being used because we are not getting opportunities to develop. I can't develop people for the sake of developing them. It doesn't work. Right. We have developed policies and procedures from management point of view. These are the things that we've done. Now, we have also gone ahead and said, in terms of partners, in view of where we're going, these are the partners that we require, financial support. We've signed MOUs with all these entities, so that we can move forward. Right. Now, we also have a database which is automated, which does a lot of things. One, it gathers general information and information related to BEE. It gathers buyer contact information per category and subcategory. Because we have categories of spend, which is around 22 or 23, if I'm not mistaken, which then helps you to know in which area is there penetration by black business and where are they lacking. So you are able to pick up, to capture that on the database. But you can only do that if people are using that database. And it's not being used. Yeah? The database on its own, it can analyze and interpret submitted information to generate preliminary BE score, which then allows you that in future you must then go and verify accurateness of that information. Because when somebody self-evaluates, they can put anything. You still need to go on site. You still need to look at the documents. You still need to interview the so-called partners that are playing in that space, etc., etc. Right? And it also helps you to determine supplier B procurement recognition level, whether is it a level 1, a good, excellent supplier, or a level 8, somebody who's very bad, or somebody who's non-compliant. And we'll show you what the system has done right now, based on the information that's from PetroSA and Target. Then you automate tenders to potential suppliers using categories and subcategories. The system can do that. And the system sends notification to matching suppliers to say there is an opportunity in company A. Yeah. And when there is no match, then the opportunity for intervention, in other words, for development, is identified. It also enables buyers to search for suppliers using categories and subcategories to filter. So these things are there. We have done this thing from management point of view. But the question is the utilization. We then took the database that we received from PetroSA. They gave us, it was around 10,935 suppliers. 9,625 of them came from PetroSA and 1,250 from Carbon. You still have suppliers who will say to you, I'm not interested. 234 of the suppliers that we contacted said they're not interested in this stuff. They deal directly with the industry anyway. They don't see any reason for us to exist. Anyway, they don't care. You have a lot of both numbers there, wrong numbers, no answer, private houses. So if you come to me and say, I've got a database that is functional, and you get those results, something is completely wrong. And our duty was supposed to then get this information so we can clean this database. Then we have suppliers that are reliable and verifiable, so that we can then check and say if they deliver or not. Just to show you as an indicator. As I speak, just based on the database that we received from the two companies, only 1,182 suppliers are on our database. 784 of that 1,182, they are non-compliant in terms of BEE. And this is in a system where people are doing self-assessment. What more when we go and do the real assessment? It then says that where you have the contribution level 1, which is the best in terms of BEE compliance, they are sitting at 42. It's 3.5% of the total number. And then you might even do a cut off at 5. Still, probably you're talking 200 odd suppliers that, based on unverified information, are supposed to be BEE. And then we come and say we've got 50% BEE spent. I doubt that. The verification process that we use, Chairperson, is extensive, it's aggressive, it does go to the detail. And I will not bore you with this thing. I think if I want to do justice to this committee, I can come back and show you the proper verification, how it's supposed to be done, and how it is done, and the issues that you can deduce from it. You use auditors. It's an auditing process. It's not an issue of sitting in the office and just calling people to say, give me this and that. You have to go into detail. Just for example, in terms of data gathering. You issue a service inquiry and form to the client. They complete the form and then submit to you. You review the form for completeness. Right? And then you then issue the BEE verification pack, a thick document, because you want to know everything technically, competence-wise. You want to know if indeed people are what they claim to be. If they say to you they've got an asset X, you want to know that. Then you have both parties signing of the verification agreement, and then the forms get sent back. You review the forms and the job for completeness. You index those documentation. You develop verification plan and preliminary report based on that information received. You follow through that and then go and begin the process of verifying and that information, you go online. Yeah. And you use external people because you want objectivity. You don't want this conflict wherein you go and self-evaluate. And on that basis, you are then able to come back and issue a draft report, which then gets looked at by both parties. The person being verified and you the verified. And once there is agreement to say, indeed, the information we have received is accurate and true, it gets signed off. Then you have a verified entity. But you can't sit in your office and phone people and say, I've now verified this. It doesn't work like that. In terms of interventions, chapter 10, when we couldn't agree, management and the board as representing the industry, on some of the things that needed to be done, there was a strategic meeting that said, you will do internal projects and external projects. The internal projects related to the database setup, business assessment tool, procurement spend categories, intervention process and methodologies, those things are done, they're in place. But in terms of the projects themselves, zero. We only received one opportunity from Total on engineering. Now, I do not know what the reasons are. And I would really appreciate if the committee can help me get those answers. What are the challenges that I'm faced with as an organization? Indeed, there are different expectations from industry and GME. These are the mandate. So you've seen our mandate. The industry says they don't like that mandate. Yet they signed the MOU and they drafted that MOU. That's where the issue is. People do not agree on the mandate. So I want to be told and be assisted to understand what's wrong with the mandate that we have as an organization. And if it needs to be tweaked, fine. You know, we'll abide by whatever needs to be done. Some oil companies continue to do their own supply development, and that's duplicating what we were set up to do. So, it's as good as putting me in a position and not giving me authority and responsibility. There was an issue around the establishment of satellite offices. The industry says, no, we can't have satellite offices. It will cost more money to the organization. We get 5 million. It would have added probably 3, 4 million on top. How much does the industry make in this country? If we're using the current GTI model, that says 3% of your net profit will go towards enterprise development. And you're giving me 5 million. And that is just for operational costs. They said, no, they don't want that. The department said, no, we want satellite offices so that we can reach rural communities. We can reach people that are closer to those refineries. You can't be running a developmental entity from Johannesburg for the whole country, because the industry operates all over the country. Yeah. So that's where the differences are. We wanted to establish a separate verification entity. They said, no, you can't do that. Not your mandate to do that. Yet, if you go back to the slides that I presented, we are supposed to verify. Because if we're going to counteract fronting, how do we do that? We have to have an entity to comply with the SANAS rules. Because SANAS rules says you can't do development and self-evaluate. So we said, we'll set up a separate company to deal with that. So that we can manage this process. But it will also help us generate income which we can then plow back to do development. Information around procurement opportunities from oil companies. We don't get it. They don't want to give it. And that's where the nub of the problem is. They do not want to list those opportunities. In other words, their specifications can't be publicized. Now, somebody help me. Petroleum, they advertise. Why are they not saying, hey, we've got a problem in that it's competition? What makes these other six companies so unique? They share the refineries, they do product swaps, they collaborate in many things. What if a tender is supposed to go out to be seen by people so that they can participate and we really want to broaden the process? I see no reason why we can't advertise those specifications. We even went further from our side as the organization and said, fine, we'll sign confidentiality agreements with you so that we can roll this thing. The transfer of all companies database to SASDA. Like I said, just two companies. So the rest have not done that. Our operations depend on what the buyers do. When they look for opportunities, they were the one suppliers, were able to determine, oh, there is a greater demand in this area, so that we can do intervention. So we're saying, one of the other challenges is that not all the oil companies utilize us as services, for reasons that I've stated. We can't recruit staff, because we're inadequately resourced. They have stated, yes, that they're seconded staff. Well, people say, they still seconded me, but all the other staff have been withdrawn. Except for one who remains from Total. So who are these people that they're talking about? So another challenge that we're talking about is the funding structure for SAS. They need to, because there is a clear understanding even in the plan that says you'll have an operational budget. And then you'll have a separate budget that comes to deal with projects. We have not even tagged the issue of projects. Because if they can't even want to increase by 200,000 rand per oil company for operational costs, what more when you're talking projects for development? And to make it worse, when those payments for operational costs come, they come late. Very late that you end up paying tax. I'm talking about a situation where the last day of the financial year, you will receive that payment from some of these companies. The issue of budget and business plan, we still do not have it approved. 18 months down the line, operating. Then there is a challenge around crude oil procurement. Yet you saw the strategy that we showed you, that it said in the 50-year, we should be able to develop suppliers who can provide those kind of services. And of course, the issue of the mandate we have raised, the satellite, the stakeholder board, etc. For me, the way forward is that the department and the other company
can sort of provide direction.
Yeah, sorry, Chair. This is my last slide, I promise. For me, the department and the oil company should provide direction regarding SASDA's mandate. We need to be told to close shop or continue or program whatever. We still anticipate that there should be full utilization of this entity. If I look at all the things that I've raised here, we would have been far in developing people if we've just done what we're supposed to do. There need to be clear targets set for individual oil companies in view of the 2010 industry cover deadline. Let's see individual companies, how they are compliant. And let's use those categories. They're there. And then measure these things. And make sure that they are properly audited. There need to be agreement on regional satellite offices, because we need to support rural entrepreneurs and create jobs. And with those satellites, you're also able to do on-the-job training. Chairperson, I'll tell you that had it not been for the pilot project to be able to allow these guys to do on-the-job training in the refinery itself, they would never have seen the day of the light. You can't train somebody to fabricate somewhere else. You train them, but they must then go to practicals inside those areas. And to do that, you need an entity that can coordinate those activities to harmonize the relationship between the expectations of the engineers who are the buyers of the service, as well as the guys that you're developing, so that you can intervene in time. You can't do anything in Johannesburg. It won't work. And we still say that we need those suppliers, the database, to be transferred to SASDA. And if you can help us with that, we'll appreciate it. And I think there's a need for a common specification framework for the industry. Your guys that are dealing with crude, etc., is unique, dealing with gas. Total does both, devils and coal and whatever. But the reality is you can begin to find commonalities around specification. And that will enable and make it easier for people to can enter and participate in this industry. We believe that as management, and we've communicated this to the department many, many times in writing, and there is progress in that regard, that this organization needs to be restructured to be a multi-sectoral development agency owned by government, but with the peace to enforce. Because if you leave it to be voluntary, we'll come back here 10 years down the line and still talk the same language. There should be serious monitoring and evaluation of performance of individual companies by the regulator, in this case the department. And I think there should be some kind of a service level agreement between the companies, the department, and the agency. And that should be prioritized. We need to review the charter to have clearly defined and measurable deliverables. We need clarity on crude. There is another hidden area called jet fuel. SAA came to see me and said they spend around 15 billion, 7 billion inside the country. But I've never seen it anywhere mentioned. It's a cartel. How do you break it in if you don't really look at the total value chain? There is a need for us to have a clear funding model and structure for SALSA outlined by the department, so that we can do what we're supposed to do, which is to empower black people. People are restless. They want jobs. If you can't get food, you can't work, you even lose your respect of your wife and kids. That's the reality. So we need to deal with these things. They're serious. They're important. We need regulations to be developed to define SALSA's role in enterprise development, in the context of enterprise development and how it will impact on procurement. It's critical. If it is not legislatively managed, it can't happen. We've seen that. Voluntary things don't work in South Africa. And I will encourage that the regulator begins to look at quarterly reviews of performance of these entities. Because if you wait for a year, you are not really going to make interventions in time. After all, oil companies and everybody else, on a quarterly basis, they must report on how they are doing. That's why we read this financial statement that says company X is not making reaching target or meeting target. So those things need to be introduced. And of course, we need to consider compliance to empowerment as a prerequisite to licensing. We're not doing that enough with this sector. And that is why it's not moving. The mining houses are being pressurized, they are beginning to see the light. But this sector is somehow left untapped. Lastly, the 15th of April, there was an article in Sunday Times, and I'll read it. This was by our Deputy President, Phumzile Mlambo-Ngcuka. I quoted it verbatim, and I've given even the website so that you can go read it as well. She was giving a total assessment around this. She says, companies don't feel under the microscope on other things in the same way as they do on equity issues. And this is one of the things I'm very sore about. You do everything to put procurement development programs in place, but the companies are not interested and undermine it. This is what is happening, for instance, with the oil companies. A formal supply development program was put in place with some resources and some personnel. But the oil companies will find every reason not to make this program work, she said. Those are not my words. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mashal, members. Okay, let's take a 5-minute break then and come back. Well, some of the things which I said that I just said are not true. We are going to be getting into that. Of course, seek some assistance as we go from the industry. Seek assistance from the department, staff, and everybody else, so that we get to the bottom of the challenge.
So I think for now we should, it was important for us to get both players who meet the industry will have a different perspective. So far we have not met that time. The third time we meet that time. That the committee would meet the department to get another version of the story. So I think we should not jump the gun. What do you think?
Take this two documents and peruse it thoroughly. Because it is chair, as you said, with reference to the empowerment deck documents that we have, and also the fact that we are meeting all the role players in this industry. We need to unbundle and come up with a common approach on this issue. I think, therefore, Chairperson, it is correct for us to say that it won't do any, in fact, we won't do justice to this document now. We want to try to engage on it. Because there are some challenging issues that need to be addressed. And that there are also those that can take us forward. Especially with the concluding remarks of the Deputy President. The presenter read out for us. Now, Chair, I will propose, because I did have some questions here, but after, as he continued his presentation, I was quite satisfied to say that, no, what you need to do here is either just this document sent us back to the drawing board to go and have another workshop on this kind of thing. You must remember, Chairperson, the MITI presenter, the member from the Merchant Bank. Now, if you put all that together, that presenter in Randburg, there's quite a lot of challenges here. And there's quite a lot of issues that we can help the industry to reach synergy amongst themselves and to move forward. But it won't help us now to do it now. We really, Chairperson, have to go back and sit as a committee, as a study group, strategize and get us a common approach and pave the way forward. Some of these issues, Chairperson.
Parliament, you are moving
to
the, if there is any Mr. Kendall to get, or we then entertain an objection.
I second the move of the week. Thank you.
Is there any objection? Objection?
No, I'm actually not objecting. I was just checking if we can entertain 5 minutes. Just clarity, there were things that were mentioned that did not exist.
It's not the objection, it's just we want clarity.
Yeah. On issues that were mentioned.
It's the issue.
There are just two quickly. One is on procurement. The second presenter said that these companies don't advertise when they do procurement. I don't understand, because policy is there that says there must be 3 months advertisement in local newspapers before procurement. Are they
violating that or what is the situation. Second one, on disability, the first presenter did not mention it. I don't know if it is part of employment issues in their company because it is government policy also. That goes to
They seem to be easy, but they are not as well. They are parts of a discussion. Let us, because you see, you are going to get a view from Sasta on these two matters. Let us say, as a way of passing here, that firstly, from the industry's point of view, I think we need to go back and do much more than what we did in terms of what is happening here. Along the lines of the second presentation, if more, if that can happen, a specific, very detailed result. So I think we need to do that. So that when Comrade Lowe says we must peruse two documents, in fact, there's nothing much to peruse from the first presentation. If you take that document we put here and the second one, we rather give the industry an opportunity to do even better because there are very specific matters raised on the second, what you call the presentation. So then that would give us this detail from the point of view, you see, why I don't want us to entertain what the Comrade is saying is that on procurement, the industry would say we are doing our best. That was the presentation. And the second presentation said, no, it's not happening. You know. So let's have that. But we'll also want, we'll communicate to the department formally, but we have the representative from the department. We also want their input on this, the department now. Perhaps a thorough, if not more. You know, because we have noted that out of the companies we have in this industry, Petrosa and Caltex have always come on the second presentation from time to time, and, you know, complying on this, complying on that. In fact, the very first slide in the presentation comes up with some detail, some specific on what is being done by Petrosa in particular. Now, we will get what we have from SASA. If there are anything to be added, I think they will communicate with us as a committee. We'll get from the industry. We'll get from the department. We are doing our own visits to this company. We have started on the report of the two companies who have visited already. We'll continue with it. At the end of it all, we are going to make our own views as well as a committee that this is what we think is the situation based on our interaction with all the companies, the entire industry, you know, as it were. So that at the end of the day, when we say we have done well here, we include even our own views, collective views as a committee, so that we then take whatever we have had. We report back to Parliament and say, this is what we think is happening in the industry. And these are the things which have come out of our own interaction with the industry, out of the players in the industry included, SASA included the department as well. So we'll be coming up with a comprehensive thing out of that. So I think we should actually thank our presenters here and members for our contribution, but it is a serious matter. You know, if actually the picture is like what the last report tells us, then we have a serious challenge. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Tinda, su photo est ID à connaître. Il n'y a pas photo de ID.
Non, non.
Il n'y a pas de photo de ID. Il
Thank you.
So what's